Golf Smarter number 373, published on March 5, 2013, is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. And by Alpha Brain by Onnit Labs. Alpha Brain contains 11 ingredients perfectly tailored to the most mental of games and clinically tested to improve driving accuracy. Learn more by clicking on the Alpha Brain ad at golfsmarter.com. And in today's Score Zone Short Game Academy, the Wedge Guy discusses bounce and which is the right one for you. But more importantly, he shocked me with a spontaneous and incredible offer to the Golf Smarter community.
SmarterPodcasts.com, delivering sound advice.
Reporter Mike Perkey on the commissioner's statement about the anchored putter rule.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter Podcast, Mike.
Hello.
How are you?
Good, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I was fascinated by your article that came out in the Global Golf Post just yesterday, dated February 25th, 2013, about Tim Fincham's stance could start a firestorm, was the title. And we've had controversy about this. We've talked about this with clubmakers on the Golf Smarter podcast, and it's all about this interesting new rule the USGA and RNA just kind of threw out there about the long putters. What have you found out from the PGA side of it, and what is Tim Fincham going through right now with this?
Well, Fincham is certainly his opinion that the USGA and the RNA should not ban anchored putting. But he also convinced the Player Advisory Council and the Tour's Policy Board. And according to Fincham, there's been a vast change of mind among the Tour players over the last few weeks. And their position now is that because the anchored putting stroke has been around for so long, because the USGA has approved it twice in years past, because the USGA does not have any hard data that says that there's a competitive advantage, the fact that the Tour believes that it would hurt the game. They believe that the professional game at the moment is in very good shape, and anchored putting does not hurt the professional game. Because they have all those opinions, they've come up with the notion that they're going to oppose the proposed ban on anchored putting strokes. And now we're going to see who blinks first.
And is the USGA intimidated by this at all?
Not one bit. You know, if you harken back years ago to the Ping Square Grooves lawsuit, the USGA wasn't really prepared to defend itself in court over this new rule. Against the deep pockets of a golf equipment manufacturer. Rest assured that the USGA has a war chest for just this very reason. And if there should be legal action taken, they will be in good shape to defend themselves.
From your research in this article, do you know how the USGA and RNA came up with this ruling? What kind of research did they do? Who did they talk to? Or is it just based on the fact that five guys won on the tour last year?
In the beginning, it was that, Fred. But the USGA has been looking at this for a couple of years now. And it's my understanding that the USGA collected a lot of hard data on the PGA Tour, looking at the percentage of players who use an anchored putting stroke. And they also looked at the putting statistics of those players who use an anchored stroke as opposed to the players who use a conventional stroke. And the data that they came up with showed that there was no competitive advantage. If you'll remember, when the USGA and RNA announced this proposed ban, they were very clear to say this is not a competition problem. This is a problem of what we think the stroke is defined as. So there's no data that shows there's a competitive advantage. And at that point, I think the USGA was reticent about doing anything, but the RNA was. The RNA really wanted to do something about this, so the USGA climbed on board. And what the straw that broke the camel's back was when Mike Davis, the executive director of the USGA, was at the U.S. Boys Junior Championship, and of the last 32 players in match play, about half of the juniors were using a belly putter, and at that point, he threw up his hands and said, that's it, we've got to get rid of this, and that's how it started. It's not a problem of competitive advantage. The USGA and RNA don't like the way it looks. You know, what they're afraid of is something that might happen rather than something that is happening. They're afraid that down the line in the next generation, the anchored stroke will be the stroke of choice rather than the stroke of last resort. And that's what makes them afraid.
I'm sorry, but I have to ask, why would they be afraid? I mean, I understand the integrity of the game, but let's talk about growing it.
Well, I would happen to agree. The USGA is hiding behind the notion that they're trying to protect the game, and they're trying to protect what is a traditional stroke. And according to them, the anchored stroke is not a real golf stroke, and the effort behind this proposed ban is to secure the definition of a stroke. And they say this is not it. Yes, I know we're trying to grow the game. And, you know, frankly, this rule affects a very small number of people. But they're also a very vocal group of people. You know, people who have gone to the anchored stroke, whether it's from a belly putter or a more traditional long putter, you know, they've gone to these methods because, you know, their putting strokes haven't been the best. They might have some problems, you know, with the yips and with their stroke and with other areas. And these people are still in the game because of the anchored stroke. You know, if you've played the game for a long time and your putting is a problem, you know, it can run you right out of the game. And the anchored stroke saved a lot of people staying in the game. Granted, it's a small number of people, but it's an important constituency just nonetheless.
Yeah, I understand you're saying a small number of people, yes, but I would definitely say an important segment of the golf community, not only for the senior players who have the physical issues of demanding a long putter, but also the golf industry, the manufacturers are going to be, and the retailers are going to be very affected by this, aren't they?
They will. You know, it won't be as big of an effect as, let's say, Square Grooves was, because, you know, the sales of long putters, you know, aren't going to make or break any of the equipment manufacturers. It's a small part of their catalog. But, you know, it's still an important part. And if they're not going to sell long putters anymore, then they're going to have to find someplace else to make up that revenue.
And what about those seniors that still love the game? It's like, you're right. It's such a small number. I get so frustrated by this. I'm having trouble speaking.
Yeah.
But it's such a small, the tour players are such a small number compared to all those people who are struggling with the game. And if they found one more thing that is not a major issue that will help their game and help the enjoyment of the game, why not?
Well, that's the opinion of Tim Fincham and the Tour Policy Board and the Player Advisory Council. And it's the opinion of a lot of other people, too. You know, why not? If the USGA approved anchored putting twice in the past. Why now all of a sudden is it so bad? And I think it just goes back to the USGA and RNA just don't like the way it looks. So they're going to legislate it out of business.
Have there been any studies, not even studies, but research done on the square grooves and the impact that that has had? Because clearly they wanted to, you know, have an impact on the tour and the tour players, but those guys are so good, they can make the adjustments and they can get the backspin where they want. Or they hit the ball up front of the green and let it release. You know, I mean, they know what they're doing, but has it had any impact on
not
the long
so
term?
You notice, you know,
yeah.
I think what the tour did was very interesting. If you'll go back and look over the last year, if you'll look at PGA Tour events in 2012, you're going to find, other than the major championships, that the rough at PGA Tour events was very short as opposed to years past. So that playing out of short rough, you know, inch and a half rough, you can still get enough spin on the ball with greens that aren't rock hard, that square grooves, the new grooves will be neutralized, that you can still play and not have the new grooves cause you problems. And I think the tour did that on purpose at the behest of the players. If you look at PGA Tour golf course layouts, they're done by the tour staff and they get input into the course setup from the players. They're doing it, you know, for the players. And I think that you know, little paid attention to tactic by the tour neutralized the new grooves.
I want to talk about bifurcation and the possibility of two sets of rules. But before we do that, I just want to say that this episode of the Golf Smarter podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. Audible would like the Golf Smarter community to take the opportunity and see for yourself how awesome it is to get involved with audiobooks, especially when you're traveling. And you get a free audiobook of your choice if you sign up at audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. And Mike, I'm sure that you travel a tremendous amount.
Not a tremendous amount, but enough.
Enough where you're reading books.
That's right.
And do you have a book that you recently read or an audiobook that you listened to that you'd like to recommend for us?
Well, I recently read, I'm a little behind the times, but I read Angels and Demons by Dan Brown, a great thriller, a page turner, but it's also so well researched that you know he's an expert on what he's writing about. And it was just, it was one of those books that you didn't want to end.
That was the second. That was the first book that Dan Brown did, right?
That was the second one, I believe.
Angels and Demons was the second one, and then what was the one?
The Da Vinci Code.
The Da Vinci Code, right? So Da Vinci Code was first, or
yes, I believe it.
And the reason I'm kind of blanking on which one was which, because I read them one right after the other, and it all merged into one book in my head,
exactly.
And that was really difficult. But it was, he's really great at the thriller, and that is available on Audible, and it probably would be really fun to listen to. It's narrated by Richard Poe, and it's 18 hours long, so what a great opportunity to get a free one first, and you can get an 18-hour book. So go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter and sign up today. And get the free audiobook, anything you like. But we were going to recommend Angels and Demons as your first one. Thank you, Mike. I appreciate that recommendation.
Absolutely.
So bifurcation. Now, here's an opportunity. I think this is a golden opportunity for Fincham to say, you know what? The rules that we have here on the tour are for our tour players. These are the best players in the world. And even the really good players who aren't on the tour, they can't keep up with our guys. So why don't we have a set of rules for the tour?
I think that's what they would like to do. Bifurcation is probably the dirtiest word in the language at the USGA, and here's why. For years and years, all golfers have played not only under the same playing rules, but under the same equipment rules as the best players in the world. And the USGA will maintain that that's one of the attractions to the game, that we can play the same equipment the tour players play, and we play under the same rules that they do. Well, that was true for a long time, but it's simply not true anymore. We can't play the same equipment that tour players play, nor would we want to. You know, for years there were persimmon heads and steel shafts and Bellotta balls, and, you know, we could play the same thing they play. But everything is so exotic now, you know, metal titanium driver heads are, you know, weighted to specification, and the shafts are custom made and X-Flex, and the ball doesn't spin like it used to. So we haven't been able to play the same equipment tour players play for probably 30 years now.
Wow.
So they do play a different game. They do play a different set of equipment. I don't mind playing by the same playing rules that everybody else plays by. That's not a problem. But I can't play the equipment that tour players play, nor am I able to, nor would I want to. So it doesn't make sense for the tour players and the amateurs to play under the same equipment rules. Golf is the only major sport that doesn't bifurcate. Football has different rules for professionals and the NCAA. Basketball has different rules for the NBA and the NCAA. Baseball has different rules
for the American League and the National League.
Exactly. And they have different rules from the college game. College game uses metal bats. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't understand why bifurcation is still such an ugly word at the USGA when, you know, they keep telling us that golfers are aspirational and we want to be like the best players in the world. Well, we just can't do that anymore. It's just not. It's not possible.
No, no. And I don't know if we want to be like that.
I would like to hit the ball long. I can't play X-flex shafts and you know, all the stuff that they play with. I couldn't do it. I'm a decent player, but I can't play with their equipment.
And I can't play 7,500 yards and have a good time.
No, absolutely not.
So do you think that there's a possibility that
Absolutely not.
Really?
No possibility.
On which side?
That the USGA. That there will ever be bifurcation in your and my lifetime.
And could the tour, could the PGA of America just go, yeah, we're going to go ahead and do this?
They absolutely could. And there's every reason to believe that they might.
Really?
Absolutely.
Tell me every reason that you say.
Well, you know, for the PGA of America and the PGA Tour to vocally oppose a proposed rule by the USGA is almost unprecedented.
Yeah.
Just about every other equipment rule and playing rule that's ever been changed in the last 40 years, the PGA Tour has gone along with, even grudgingly. You know, square grooves. They said, okay, we'll do it. So this is the first time in anybody's memory that the best players in the world have opposed an equipment rule by the USGA. Every other rule they've gone along with except this one. So what they're saying is, we oppose this rule, and if it comes to fruition, we have the ability to create a condition of competition to allow anchored putting strokes at our tournaments. The problem is, Fred, that the PGA Tour does not run any major championships. And so what you would wind up with, if the PGA Tour went out on its own, the U.S. Open and the Open Championship would operate under the new USGA RNA rules. The PGA Championship, you know, could go along with the PGA Tour and allowed anchored putting at the PGA Championship. The Masters has USGA and RNA people on their committees, so they're likely to go along with the USGA.
Yeah.
But you know, what you would have is chaos at a level that nobody has ever seen before.
Does the USGA want to grow the game?
They say they do, but they also say they want to protect the traditions of the game.
That's tough. Have the USGA lost touch with what's going on out there for golfers?
I don't know that I would go that far, Fred, but I think what they're a little myopic. They see things in a very narrow scope. They are looked at, and they look at themselves as protectors of the game. And they, you know, they firmly believe that banning anchored putting strokes is in the best interest of the game, and it protects the game.
And are they aware that, I would have to say the majority of golfers, I mean, I can go even farther than majority and say a significant amount of golfers don't even play by the rules.
Oh, there's no question about it. You know, if I had the ability to change one or two rules of golf, the first one I would change is stroke and distance for out of bounds, because nobody plays that anyway except in tournaments.
Right.
You know, you hit a ball out of bounds, you go find it out of bounds, you drop one where it went out of bounds, you keep playing. That's what the vast majority of people do.
Mm-hmm.
And they do that with a lot of rules.
Mm-hmm.
The USGA, on the other hand, wants to protect the rules for the championships, however many, the 20-something championships that they run, professional and amateur. And that's, that's their reason for being.
Where do you think Fincham is going to bend, or is he, where, what do you predict on this?
You know, I honestly can't make an intelligent prediction, Fred, because they've drawn a line in the sand and they've said, okay, USGA, we oppose this new rule. Now let's see what you're going to do. And I don't think the USGA is going to back down. I think they're going to implement the new rule. You know, they wanted a 90-day comment period. They got it. You know, be careful what you wish for. and they've got the comments. But I believe that it's not going to stop them. They're going to go ahead and implement the ban. Now, you know, what happens after that is that Tim Fincham, commissioner of the PGA Tour, he has to go back to his tour policy board and the player advisory committee and say, okay, here's what I think we should do. What do you want to do? Because he serves at the pleasure of the players, first and foremost. And I would sincerely doubt that the players, when polled, would say, we're going to go against the USGA in this new rule. I can't see that happening.
Mm.
But, this business of Fincham and the tour opposing the new rule, I didn't see that coming either. So, I might not be the right one to ask.
Have you spoken to various players on the tour about this topic?
I haven't personally, but I have talked to people who have.
And?
You know, most of the players don't care because it doesn't affect them.
Mm-hmm.
You have a vocal minority on either end of the question. And according to Fincham, a lot of the players started to come around. I saw some Twitter feeds from Zach Johnson, who was, basically signing on with the tour, saying it hasn't hurt the professional game. There's no competitive advantage. There's no upside to this rule, and there's plenty of downside. That's why we oppose the ban. I can't see them standing up and saying, okay, USGA, you've made this new rule. We're not going to play by it. I just can't see that happening. But it could.
Well, there's a PR nightmare as well, because most people, when they've heard about this, they think that they're banning the long putters.
Yeah, that's true. But in all practicality, they are, Fred. And here's why. Try using a long putter without anchoring it. You won't do very well with it.
Right.
Right. That's the whole reason for being for the belly putter and the long putter, is that so you can anchor it to a part of your body. Mm-hmm. You know, if you try using one of them without anchoring, it's just going to, it'll be like holding a rattlesnake. You don't want to know where it's going.
You mentioned a moment ago that Fincham answers to the players, which I find absolutely fascinating, considering that, as you discussed, the NBA, Major League Baseball, the NFL, and the NHL, the commissioners of those, you know, the major sports, those commissioners answer to the owners, not the players.
Well, and, you know, golf is singularly unique,
right,
in that, you know, each player is a team unto itself. You know, these are, 250 independent contractors on the PGA Tour that have, you know, their own, they own their own team. So if you look at it like that, you know, Fincham is, you know, serving 250 separate owners.
Yeah, right. But he's also, it seems to be, the intermediary between the PGA Tour players, owners, and the USGA. Is the USGA feeling like they've been stabbed in the back here?
Maybe. But, you know, I'm sure the USGA didn't see this coming. Right. Except in the last couple of weeks, nor did anybody else. I didn't see it coming. A lot of other people didn't see it coming. You know, this has thrown a major wrench into the works. And it's a line in the sand. And the tour has said, this is our stance. This is how our members want us to vote. Now let's see what you're going to do.
And when's this all going to be resolved?
USGA says sometime in the spring. They were very vague, purposely. but, you know, that's as much as we can get, sometime in the spring.
Wow. Well, again, your article's in the Global Golf Post at globalgolfpost.com. What are you working on now? What else can we expect to see from you soon?
Well, we're a weekly magazine, so we're hard at work on next week's issue, and we've got coverage of the Honda Classic and the LPGA event in Singapore and the European Tour event in South Africa. So we're trying to line up all the troops and get it all covered so we can get it in next Monday's issue.
Well, good luck and congratulations on this piece. Thank you very much for agreeing to discuss it with us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's time once again for our Score Zone Short Game Academy with Terry the Wedge Guy Kaler, CEO of Score Golf. And if you have a question that you'd like Terry to answer on our podcast, please submit it at golfsmarter.com. Click on the Score Zone Short Game Academy button, submit your question, and if Terry uses it like the one he's going to use today, you will receive a free, I'm going to say it, Terry, I'm sorry, you're going to receive a free wedge customized by Score Golf, one of the Score 4161 scoring club wedges, and it'll be yours for free, and they'll work with you to make sure it's exactly right for you. So go ahead and submit your question. But before we get to the question submitted by Josh Thurman, tell me, Terry. Well, first say, hi, Terry.
Hey, Fred. How are you?
I'm fine. Well, what's your thought about this whole belly putter controversy?
Well, I have mixed emotions. I'm a very traditional guy. I'd still play persimmon if it wasn't so penalizing. But, I think it's kind of knee-jerk. I've never liked it personally. I've never liked the deal. I don't think it looks like golf, and that's apparently where the USGA is coming from, is they don't think it looks like golf. But I don't think the belly putter is a threat to the integrity of the game, and it helps people, enjoy the game, people with back problems, people that have dealt with the yips. And, and the last thing we need to do is to ban something that may be some golfer's last ditch at, if he loses that, he's going to quit the game, because we don't need that. It's not like everybody on the PGA Tour is making everything they look at with long putters. And I think the distance the ball travels and the distance is a lot more threatening to our game than long putters and belly putters. Put me on the record as saying I think they need to leave it alone.
Hmm. All right, you're on the record. Thank you. I appreciate it.
But you'll never find one in my bag.
A record?
No, a long putter.
Okay. All right, well, let's get to our question from Josh Thurman. He lives in Clarksville, Tennessee, in the county of Montgomery. I don't think he meant country of Montgomery. And he says, hey, wedge guy, I see wedges with a lot of different bounce angles. And after some research, there's a lot of conflicting ideas. Some people say more is always better. Some people say it depends on the type of course you play. And I've even seen advertisements for zero bounce wedges. He says hitting wedges in the store on a simulator only gives you one type of lie, the mat. So how do I know which kind of bounce would be appropriate for me?
Well, I think this is a great question, and we deal with this every day at Score Golf, and we address the bounce conundrum by creating a sole called the V-sole that puts a high bounce and a low bounce in every wedge. But let's go back to what you're given, you know, what his questions were and what you're given to work with. General consensus advice from all the major companies that publish verbiage about wedges is that if you play soft turf, you need a high bounce. If you play tight turf, you need a low bounce. If you have a steep angle of attack, you need a high bounce. If you have a shallow angle of attack, you need a low bounce. And that's the advice. The problem is you're sitting in the store, standing in front of a wedge display with all these various options, and that advice would require you to know what your next lie is going to look like. And that's impossible. And on any golf course, if you play multiple golf courses, if you play the same golf course every day, there are still going to be a variety of lies out there. So a low bounce wedge that you bought because it's really good on tight lies is going to handicap you on that fluffy lie. A high bounce wedge that you bought because of the soft bunkers and the fluffy lies is going to handicap you when you're in a tight lie. I'm going somewhere with this, Josh. Hang on a minute. Then they talk about the angle of attack, and you hear terms like sweeper, slider, digger. Well, a mid to high handicap golfer is not always a sweeper, slider, or digger. Because they're a high handicap, their swing path is going to vary. And every one of you out there listening, probably sometimes you go, wow, I dug a big old divot that time. And a few swings later, it's like, wow, I nipped that one really nice and barely clipped the grass. So you can't fit something that's constantly changing. A good player changes his swing path intentionally, sometimes steep, sometimes shallow, sometimes in between, to hit different kinds of wedge shots. As you perfect your scoring game, you'll learn how to do that. A mid to high handicapper varies his swing path unintentionally because he's a mid to high handicapper. So you're going to play different lies. You're going to play different kind of swings. And the problem with conventional wedges that, and at Score Golf, let's be very blunt, we pick on them because wedges are designed just like they were 50 years ago. And you have the single bounce wedge. It's really good at some things, kind of acceptable at other things, and really horrible at some lies. If you are thinking about a new wedge and that store will not let you take one just like it out to a golf course so that you can put it through the paces in real turf on every kind of lie imaginable, every kind of shot you know how to hit, tell them thank you, but no thank you. You have to try the wedge out. And you have to try it on courses you like, on lies that you're going to run into. You have to be imaginative. You know, take it over by the cart path where the lie is tight. Take it into the fluffy bunker. Take it into the wet-packed bunker. Take it out in the close-cropped fairway, the rough. Everywhere you can think of that might simulate a shot you're going to have as long as you own that wedge. And if it is really difficult off some of those lies, take it back to the store and try a different one. The other option is to buy Score wedges with a V-sole, and you don't have to worry about that. Shameless plug.
you're allowed.
but the point is bounce is a specialized feature of a golf club, of a wedge. And they talk about tour bounce all the time. You didn't mention that in your question, but I just saw an ad today for one of the top brands of wedges that talked about a new grind that they perfected with their tour players. Well, I'll tell you which one of you guys need that. That's the guys that all of you out there that would challenge Tiger and Phil to $100 a shot up and down contest. Okay. The fact is tour players do nothing. They don't don't have to go sell stocks or insurance or work in a factory or be an accountant or sell golf clubs. All they have to do is practice their golf game, and they can get away with and benefit from very specialized wedge soles. And the last thing in the world a recreational player wants to do is grab a tour player's wedge sole. That tour grind that was ground just specifically for Joe Tour player is exactly what Joe Tour player wants in the given set of conditions, because if the conditions change, he gets to go to the tour trailer and get him some brand new free wedges. And we all don't get to do that. So specialized wedge soles are just that. They're going to be really good at some things. They're going to be okay at other things, and they're going to be really awful at some things. And that's when they're going to bite you. Mm-hmm. So if you're shopping for a wedge, I'd love for you to give Score 4161 a try with our patented V-sole. But at the very least, go to a store and say, I want to take this wedge to the golf course. I want to hit a bunch of shots with this. And if they won't let you do it, don't buy it. It's that simple.
It is that simple. And, you know, I was thinking as you were describing the different opportunities, the different shots that you could make, if you can find a practice facility, a driving range that's not off of plastic mats, if you can find a dirt, right, or a grass range, you're going to find a lot of different lies just on the range itself, let alone if you get to go over to the bunker and short game and whatnot. But, I mean, so many people leave nasty divots in a driving range at the end of the day. You could practice there too, couldn't you?
Well, exactly. And testing a wedge on a driving range mat is like test driving a Maserati in a Walmart parking lot. It's just not very beneficial at all.
You will create a crowd.
No. Just can't see what it'll do.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, and if you are interested in going ahead and buy yourself one of the Score 4161 wedges, take advantage of the 10% discount you get because you're a Golf Smarter listener. If you're going to talk to someone on the phone or you're going to deal with it online, all you have to do is mention Golf Smarter and you will get a 10% discount. If you are a Golf Smarter member, you will get a 15% discount on all of your purchases. I can't give you the checkout code on that until you become a Golf Smarter member, because it's posted right there on the homepage of Golf Smarter for members only. So take advantage of these great discounts. Take advantage of their very generous return policy and get yourself into a Score 4161 scoring club, just like Josh is about to do. And Josh, we want to hear back from you. We want to know what you think once you get your wedge and how it's changed your game, don't we?
Exactly. And Fred, I'm going to throw something in for your listeners. We had kind of a short program this afternoon. We know how good our product is. And for your listeners and your listeners only, this is a private offer.
Whoa.
I would invite your listeners who live in the continental U.S., please, if you would like to try a Score 4161 51-degree gap wedge with your choice of shaft for 30 days, 100% risk-free, the first 100 who request that, we will send you a Score at no charge. We'll take a deposit on your credit card. We will not even charge you for shipping because you've been listening to this podcast. You know what Terry Kaler and what Score Golf is all about. The first 100 that send an email to trial, T-R-I-A-L, at scoregolf.com, S-C-O-R-G-O-L-F.com. Let us know what shaft you would like to try, and we will send you a Score 51-degree wedge to put through the paces for a month and show you just what we're doing here.
How are you going to get the club back?
We're going to have them send it back when they place their order for their full set, because that's what they're going to want to do.
That's an amazing, wow. I'm kind of blown away. That is a very generous offer. So again, you must be in the continental United States on this one, just because of shipping purposes, obviously. But you will get a 51-degree Score 4161 wedge for 30 days, and you have to send your request to trial at scoregolf.com. Score is S-C-O-R-G-O-L-F. And they are going to take the first 100 responses, so jump on it. Oh, my God.
And we are not even going to charge you for shipping.
Did you, you might want to tell your marketing people that you did this. Thank you very much.
Marketing people.
Oh, that's right. Well, thank you. That's really awesome. Thank you very much.
Well, we've enjoyed this program. We enjoy your listeners, and we'll get to see just how many you have. We'll see how many of these emails we get to claim these 100 trial wedges.
Come on, folks. Make it look like I got 100 listeners. Change your name. Use different email addresses. No, don't. I think you're going to get your 100 responses.
Brad, come on here.
Yeah, listen, I don't bet on golf, and I don't bet on... Well, I'll bet you on the 100. Well, okay. Terry, thank you. That was very generous. And again, we advise everyone to submit your questions so you'll get the... Not only will you get that 51-degree wedge for 30 days, you will get one forever if he answers your question. Terry, thanks so much.
Thank you, Fred. We'll see you next time.
I want to follow up on the conversation with Mike Perkey, because just this morning, the USGA came out with a statement now that the 90-day feedback period has come to a close. And these are quotes from it, but I'm going to summarize here. The 90-day comment period on proposed Rule 14-1B has been very constructive, and we appreciate the thoughtfulness of everyone who offered feedback. And then it goes on to say, throughout this period, we have worked to explain the intent of Rule 14-1B, which aims to clarify and preserve the tradition, an essential nature of the golf stroke that has helped to make golf a unique and enjoyable game of skill and challenge for centuries. Blah, 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 blah. We will continue to review and evaluate the feedback that we have received. As we have throughout this process, we will continue to confer with the RNA in our work to reach a final resolution on this matter. Now, for that entire statement, go to golfsmarter.com on the blog post, and I'll list the entire everything that they said there. And you can also see, I'll put this up, that both the USGA and the RNA worked together to create a video explaining their position and the proposed rules. So you can see that one at the blog post as well. I want to take a moment to thank Onnit Labs for their support of the Golf Smarter podcast, and thank them for helping me, because they've enhanced my focus and, oh boy, they've eliminated the unwanted distractions that I'm always having. And it happens when I use Alpha Brain when I'm on the golf course. Having the ability to stay focused and determined, the knack for staying calm in tense situations, is why Alpha Brain is the ideal brain food. Containing nutrients designed to help the body elevate levels of major neurotransmitters, Alpha Brain can help you to actualize your mind's true potential. For the most mental of games, improve yours today. Click on the ad for Alpha Brain at golfsmarter.com and you will receive 10% off your entire order. Now, if you order a 90-count bottle, in addition to your 10% discount, you'll also get some free gifts from Onnit Labs. Also, thanks and congratulations to both Caleb Ames, who is our newest Golf Smarter member, and Michael Hamill of Calgary, Canada, who not just renewed his membership, he signed up all over again because he wanted to also receive the free box of Dixon Wind balls with the Golf Smarter logo. Both Caleb and Michael are going to receive free 30-count bottles of Alpha Brain, and that's courtesy of Onnit Labs. Thank you very much to all three of you. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.